Welcome to the B-Sound Podcast. Today we welcome Will Stenner from Discover Radio, discoveryouradio.com. Discover You Radio LLC broadcasts out of Fort Collins, Colorado, and is dedicated to helping build a better community. They say, we believe in being good to people and doing our part to make someone else's day a better one. Welcome to the podcast, Will.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Did I get all that information correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Cool.
That's the motto.
That's the motto?
Yeah, that's the motto of the station.
So you, well, why don't you go ahead and tell the audience, like, just who you are and what you do?
My name is Will Stenner. I'm just a type of person who has an active mind. So I'm a musician. I wrote a lot of songs. I got songs out there. I've done internet radio for many years, off and on. Sometimes I go into hiatus. Sometimes I get back at it. So I've done that for a long time. I work a regular day job. So my job as a professional is a service consultant for GMC. So I'm a certified service consultant for the automotive industry as well. Happily married. I've got a lot of kids and grandkids. I may not look like I have grandkids, but I got a lot of grandkids. Yeah.
Nice.
I'm pretty much a free thinker. And I'm a rebel. I have a rebel soul. So I'm not good with authority. And
yeah, I hear you there.
People love me. People hate me. I don't know.
So you say you're a rebel. You kind of strike me as a rock and roller. Are you a rock person?
Yeah, I am a rock person, especially thrash metal. Crossover punk thrash is my favorite, like DRI, Dirty Rotten Imbeciles, The Crucified. There's all kinds of 90s, 80s and 90s rock and thrash or thrash metal. But I also love rock. Actually, I love multi-genres, so to say. My flavor in music, it varies a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
In the 80s, it was Metallica, Slayer, Megadeth, Exodus, DRI, and Testament. Those were my go-to bands back then.
Yeah.
Suicidal Tendencies.
That's kind of a wide variety of that type of heavy music too.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it, but I just can ramble on about it.
Sure. Sure. So in the 90s, I'm curious, did you get into like the grunge thing?
I like grunge more now because it's been fed to us through the radio. So I think because it's been spoon-fed to us, I've adapted to it. When it first came out, I did like Nirvana and stuff. There was a certain bands that kind of, I think that a lot of the heavy metal heads like me could relate to the sound of that, because they had developed a sound that was a cross between punk rock and pop.
Nirvana kind of had some metal in there too. Like they had like Slayer's producer, like, mix the Nevermind. So they had that kind of metal edge to the sound to it as well.
Yeah. There were certain grunge, Soundgarden, Stone Temple Pilots had to grow on me. I didn't really care for them at first, but then they grew on me. And then all of a sudden I just kind of like, I think it was around 99, 2000, I started liking them a lot more.
Yeah.
But I think it was more because they were pushed on the radio a lot.
Sure.
It just, you kind of hear the same thing and you get used to the lyrics and then you start jumping in. Pearl Jam, I did not like Pearl Jam, and then I ended up loving Pearl Jam. It was like, didn't like it at first. It grew on me and then I loved it,
Sure, sure. I was that way with Stone Temple Pilots too. It was like, I thought that they were kind of just like doing the grunge thing because everybody was doing the grunge thing and I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
But later they developed their own sound and their own thing and it got good, I thought.
I think what it was is I was caught in my own little group. I was just caught into what I listened to and what I liked, and I wasn't paying attention. So I didn't pay attention or give it, I wasn't real like a music nerd or critique. I just liked what I liked, and I would listen to a lot of the same songs a lot over and over on my of my own that I liked. And I just think throughout, I did not allow it to, I didn't allow the time to just kind of meditate on it and really listen to it, you know, and take it in like I do now. I can take music in a lot easier. Plus I know a lot more about music now, the structure, the notes and everything. Back then I just knew power chords. I knew grooves and power chords, and that's all I really liked.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think that it sounds like you've grown a lot because, I mean, what you're doing now, you know, especially where you're giving new artists a chance and things like that. I mean, that takes, you know, takes some skill to like sit down and actively listen to a new artist, I think.
I live vicariously through that because I've been there. I am a singer-songwriter artist who had the dream of making it, and things were going good for me, but I didn't like it so much when it started to grow. Because I wrote a few songs. One of my songs I wrote is called Your Eyes. It did well for me. And I ended up going on TV, doing like television interviews and some radio spots, and I was growing a fan base. And then as it was growing, especially through MySpace, and then I switched over to Facebook, I was in the do-it-yourself music when it was first coming out as do-it-yourself. This is when record labels were starting to wane and go away, and artists like me had to learn how to do it yourself. And I'm part of that era where it was developing like that. And not having, before that, musicians, artists, they needed agents. They got signed. They had managers, agents, and all that other stuff. So they knew how to separate friends and fans. And there was a way to manage that. I call it a fanship because it's like a friendship with their fans. I didn't have that. I didn't have that. So I got inundated with so much, so many emails and phone calls and people getting a hold and sending me letters and stuff that it was just, I didn't want it anymore. People prying into your private life. So I didn't have that management system to have a private life and separate the thing. And here I used to say stuff like, well, I'm an open book. You know, they're not friends. They're not fans. Those are friends. I call them friends, not fans. Well, that was a mistake because there's people out there that are very delusional, and there are people who are not safe. And so I didn't care for that, and I separated, and I just kind of stepped down from it. And I lost the drive and didn't want to. What I thought fame would be is not what I expected, and I didn't want it. So I just started doing stuff behind the scenes, started, you know, writing songs for people on the side, going in the studio, recording their songs for them. Even though I wrote the songs, giving them, letting them have all the credit, just I'd charge an upfront fee. They'd pay me. I'd make some money and their names on the song, you know.
Yeah, that's not a bad gig. That's not a bad gig at all.
That's what I was doing.
So I'm a musician as well, and I've been out there, and I've done things that, you know, where the fame started rising, and I had a obsessed fan who, it got a little bit crazy, you know? I really haven't ever told this story, but it got crazy because this fan, like, would write to me constantly every day, like, what are you doing? What's going on? And I was like, hey, I just need you to back off for a minute. And he was like, you're the worst person in the world. And like, targeted my house. He like knew, found out where I lived. He was targeting my family. He was trying to like, my daughter at the time was 16, and this dude is in his 20s. He was trying to like date her. He was like everything, trying to just break all the boundaries. And yeah, it was tough. I mean, we had to get, I had to step back and, you know, get the authorities involved and everything. So it sucked. I can relate, you know. I don't know if yours was that bad, but
it seemed like something I really wanted because I used to dream big. I used to dream about the stadiums and doing that. And then it wasn't what I thought. And then you start to meet celebrities. You're getting in the in crowd, and people are knowing you on the in crowd. And then you get to know them, and you find out some people are just not as nice as you think.
Sure.
Be on the bad side. There's a lot of great people, a lot of rock and roll icons out there who are just magnificent. They know their craft. They know how to handle, you know, fans and stuff, and are just really cool. But there are some out there that are just, you know, the ego is just really disappointing, I'd say. Like you meet somebody that you're a big fan of and you can't wait to meet him. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm meeting this person, and you meet him and you're disappointed. So, you know, you run into that too.
For sure. I know exactly how that goes. Some people buy into their own fame. They buy into their own story.
Yeah.
You know, they're too busy being that character to give you the time of day or whatever.
It is a business. It's how people earn a living. It's just like clocking in and clocking out. In all reality, your colleagues, your peers, and some people are at higher levels than others. And, you know, some people are, there's just a handful of people who are on the top of the superstardom area. And then there's a lot of people who are in the intermediate area, and they're still making a good living. They're still pretty popular, still pretty famous, you know. And then there's the people who are desperate to be famous, you know,
mm-hmm.
are interesting, to say the least. I was one of those. I was that desperate person. I wanted to live the dream, and the dream was turning into a nightmare.
You know, I see a lot of that on TikTok, whether it's musicians or not. Like, you know, because that's how I found you, is through TikTok. And it's sometimes the desperation is a little off-putting. You know what I mean?
Have you seen that thing with Jennifer Lawrence and Zach Galifianakis?
No.
And they're doing the in-between two ferns.
Okay. I know that bit. But...
And she says something and he goes, that's a little off-putting. And she goes, you should be off-putting.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I haven't seen that one. No.
You'll see it. It's funny. Oh my gosh. It's like, it's every time it pops up in my feed, I watch the whole thing. Makes me laugh every time. That just kind of, when you said that should be off-putting, that skit immediately hit my memory.
That's cool. I'll have to check that out.
But to get back to the independent thing, the do-it-yourself thing, I learned a lot, because a lot of artists nowadays, it's laid out on the table for them. Back then, I had to find, it was a lot harder, because there was a lot of doors that were hard to get through, and people had to really know you, and you had to find a way to reach people. And in it wasn't right now we call it spamming. Back then, it really wasn't there. Spam wasn't a big, it wasn't a big name yet. Things weren't really called spam, and that's when you're sending letters out, just trying to get your name out there, trying to reach people that can make you or break you. And there was a time where it really wasn't considered spamming yet, you know.
Yeah,
we had to learn what spamming was. And then there was people like me who were learning how to get in contact with these high level executives, you know, and you don't know. So you're trying to reach the director, and the director's inundated with people trying to reach them to get their song in music or television. So you really don't know who you're looking for. You're just like trying to find out who these people are. And then I remember music supervisor came across. It was like, hey, you should try music supervisors. And when I would watch the movies and it said music by, I used to think that's the person who wrote the music in the movies, where it said music by. I didn't realize that was the person responsible for getting all the other music acts in the movies.
Right.
But you'll see some movies where it says music by and it is the artist. And I'm thinking, well, Either somebody did the credits wrong, or that was done on purpose to hide the music supervisor from being inundated from the do-it-yourself artists.
Yeah.
There's tricks to the trade, and when you find a way to get through the door, they find a way to close it, so you have to find another way around.
That's a good way to put it. I never thought about that, but yeah, you're right. You're totally right.
Oh, it changes constantly. I see it's changed now. I see all the gurus out on TikTok on, you know, 3 ways to do this or 10 ways to do this. The number one way to, and it's like, it's okay, but it's like, unless you get out there and find a way to do it, you get a lot more respect out of the fact that when you are reaching in a genuine matter and not going through the how-to books. The how-to books are where these people are inundated through everybody finding that resource. And you got, like, there's a site called Sonic Bids. They've been out for a long time. They got hundreds of thousands of bands on there. So can you imagine if you're somebody in the industry and somebody gives some type of how to reach this person or that person, and then this person that is responsible for finding music now has an inbox full of 10,000-20,000 emails all at once. So these how-to videos ruin it for people in those positions, and what they do is they have to find another resource to pick the best of the best. So this way they're not getting low budget, under budget material with people who don't have an agent or people who don't have representation, you know, who are do-it-yourself artists. So that type of stuff really makes it difficult, because the floodgates open up and now this person has to get a new email. They got to change their email address and change everything up. So if you understand what I mean.
I do understand what you mean. And I think those how-to videos, I mean, they do have their place and they have some value. But they should be used as like a springboard, right? Like, here's 3 ways to do this. But then you think, well, how can I do this a little outside the box that'll get me seen? You know, that kind of thing.
And I think a lot of them too are their business owners. So, you know, they want the person to come to them and they're the person, they want them to pay them the fees for the next step up. You know, it's like my Discovery Radio. It's a business. Discovery Radio it's a business. And I usually use it for making advertisements. So I hire a voiceover guy. I go on Canva, put together a video, make an advertisement, you know, get paid $375 or whatever, make a video, get out there for restaurants or what have you. You know, I've done all kinds of different videos for different things, but that's pretty much what that is. The music part of it is musicians typically they're broke because they don't finance their projects. They don't consider the marketing part. This is what I found with musicians. They can have the money if they thought ahead before recording. Like before recording a song, they'll put all their heart and soul into recording a song, buy all the equipment, hire engineers or hire what they need to do, and not even consider marketing, because they think the one-hit wonder that is in their heart and mind is going to reach the right person and they're going to take off and live off that single for the rest of their life. It's like the common delusion in a lot of artists. So they don't consider the fact that they're going to need some marketing money to market their product. Nobody really considers that. So they're always broke when it comes to marketing, but yet they have their product. They have a product. They had to buy the software to get it, you know, even if it's just $50 in marketing, they're always broke. They're, you know, they don't even have that a majority, like 80%. You know, so.
Well, I mean, as an audio engineer, they don't sometimes even have the money to do, you know, many artists come to me and be like, hey, I want to record, but I only have $20 for my budget. And it's like, man, well,
Yeah.
How bad do you want to record? Because you got to come up with some more than that.
It's a lack of understanding.
Yeah, it is a lot of that.
I don't know. The studio that I usually go to, the rates are about $75 an hour. And they probably have gone up because last time I was there was in 2009. So I haven't recorded since for a long time. It's been a long time. You know, hiring engineer, hiring session singers for, you know, backups and answers and stuff. It's been a while. So I don't know what the rates are now, but that's what I was paying, was $75 an hour. So by the end of the day, I'm spending about $1,000 for one single.
Sure.
That's one day.
Right. Right. Yes. That's pretty reasonable.
After I did that, I did not consider marketing. I didn't consider how much it's going to cost to get it out there. Spent all this money on the recording, but how am I going to get it out into the platform? I had no clue what I was doing.
No, and you're right. People think the magical fairy tale, because I think we were fed that, you know, this is what rock and roll is. You go in, you record, and then the right person hears it. Somebody hears it, they take you and they sign you, and you're off to the stardom.
It's a fantasy. I think a lot of musicians live that fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And then reality hits, and then, you know, you'll see them on TikTok, you know, the people with the nobody listens to my song. Look, trying to get the attention. I've seen them come through. Nobody listens to my song. And I'm like, okay, you know, you're who I'm after. You're the person. Discovery Radio is the, I'm not here for perfection. I'll play. The recording doesn't have to be perfect. I'm not talent scouting. I'm just saying, hey, I'm giving your song an opportunity here. I'm gonna play it on the radio, and I'm gonna give it the fair chance that you think it deserves.
When you take an artist like that, do you put them in the regular rotation or just like a few times?
No, I'll put them on regular rotation.
Okay.
They go into regular rotation. I just put them in because if their song happens to come up sometime, they get their spin.
Okay.
I have the station programmed on its own to where certain songs have their priorities, and it's called a logic. I have it set, designed in a logic where it will pull a song if it hasn't been played like in several days. It'll pull a song just to, you know, get it and put it in and get it its play. But say nobody's tuned in and listening to my station. There's times where it's just, there's dead air. Songs are playing, but nobody's tuned in at all. They don't get paid the performance royalties. There has to be somebody listening in order for that performance. So if the song plays and it gets spun, but it doesn't show that there was any viewers or listeners in at the time the song played, it doesn't get reported for performance royalties. Only if it's been, if it shows that somebody was logged in at the time listening.
Interesting.
Well, sometimes there's a lot of people, and there's times where it's dead. There's just nobody. And it goes dead when I'm not active, nobody really listens. But if I'm active, people are logging in.
Sure. I probably listened to it today for like half an hour. I think I heard like one artist that I'd never heard of before, and then like The Doors and like Chris Cornell and a couple of, you know, it was kind of a wider variety of stuff.
It's a very wide variety. Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom, it's like this. Have you ever gone, this is how I run my station. Have you ever went on a trip with a friend and you're kind of like interested in, they kind of have a different music taste than you, and you're kind of interested in hearing their playlist. So they're playing their playlist, and it's not to what you would like typically listen to, but it's like an interesting type of playlist because it's random.
Yeah, yeah. And you might find a gem in there.
They'll go from MC Hammer to Slayer, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of what how I like to have my station, because that's how I listen to music.
Mm-hmm.
I can go from Beethoven's Fifth to, you know, The Doors' Roadhouse Blues, or some Cab Calloway, you know, to Jane's Addiction. You know, it's like, I like, that's my mix. And that's how I listen to music. So it's like listening to my extensive playlist.
This is like your curated thing then.
It's my curated playlist. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I set it on random most of the time. And I listen to, it's the music that I like to listen to. And I actually, it's what I listen to when I go to bed. I put it on. I have tinnitus, so my ears ring at night. I need music to play. I just put my station on. Mm. If I'm not riding a train or a plane or listening to the ocean waves, I'll put my station on.
Right, because otherwise it rings. I hear you. So how many songs would you say is on there then?
I've got a lot more that needs to be added because they're in my iTunes. And every song that's in here has been purchased. There's not one song in this that I've not bought. Even if it's mainstream, you know, artists, I believe in the same support for them as I do independent artists.
So you're buying them, like, are you ripping like CDs that you have and using that, or?
This is all off of iTunes. Some stuff has been sent to me through email, but I'll go to the artist PayPal and make sure that I pay for it. It's something that I'm stuck on.
Sure.
Right now I have 1,429 tracks.
Not bad. Not bad.
I probably got about a couple hundred more to add in here who are sitting in my iTunes who I've not added in yet.
And you compare that to like a mainstream radio station who plays the same, you know, 50 songs over and over again. And that's quite a big variety.
I have commercials that say you're listening to the best radio station in the world. Hmm. I also have one that talks about, aren't you tired of listening to the same old songs playing on repeat 10,000 times a day? So I have a commercial that says that.
Nice.
We're the best station in the world because we play independent artists. And we are you tired of the gatekeeping, wealthy, commercial? You know, I just kind of like, it's fun, you know. It's almost like I'm poking the giant.
Yeah. It's the rebel in you.
Sometimes I think they're going to come after me. So if something goes wrong with my computer, I'm like, oh, they stuck me with the virus. So somebody out there has power.
About 10 years ago, I got into a pirate radio station where someone just asked me, hey, I've got a pirate FM radio station. Would you come be on it? And I was like, sure, I'll get, you know, like, I'd like to see what that's all about. And went in and I was there for like 2 weeks. And you know, I just played whatever I felt like playing and it was a lot of fun, but they did come after us. And that guy who owned it, there was a sting operation, lost all of his gear, I don't even know what happened to him after that. I didn't see him ever again.
They will. Yeah. If it's truly pirated, yeah, they'll come after you. They'll chase that frequency down, and find it. Yeah. But luckily I do everything legal. I'm legal. So.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a way better route to go.
Oh, it is. It's not cheap. It's not cheap.
Sure.
Especially, you know, investing in other artists' music. $1.29 to a band and buying one song may not be much, but when, you know, at the end of the month, it adds up. Especially I go on my lives every night. That's when I mostly buy it off my lives because there's people who I get to see their initial reaction, which I love. I love to see that, you know, they're excited that they got played on the radio. There's people that are like, this is the first time I've ever been played on the radio. And to me, I'm like, well, Kip has kind of got on me about this. I'll be like, well, I'm just a small internet radio station. You know, it's like, to me, it's like, I'm thinking it's not a big deal. But to the person on the other end, I'm flattered that they think it's a big deal. But I think I'm just used to my environment, being an internet radio station. I'm used to my environment. And I can remember the first time I was played on the radio. So, and how excited it was. But I was on FM the first time I got played on radio. Well, no, that's not true. Now I think about it. I was on AM radio when I was in a band. But as a solo artist, the first time my song was on the radio, I'll never forget the moment. And I got out of work. I worked at this place called Family Honda. It was in Rancho Santa Margarita, California. I was a service writer then, just like I do now. And so as you could see, radio is not a big thing where I live off of it. I put more money into it than I get out of it.
Sure.
But I got in my car and I'm driving home, and I lived in Victorville, so it was a 100-mile drive one way. And so I had the radio. So I get in the car and I hear somebody announce my song, but I'm not really paying attention. I don't know if they announced my name or not. I just wasn't paying attention. Just the radio was on. It's kind of, you know how it's like the radio's on, but you're really not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, and then something struck me. I'm like, something sounds familiar. And I was like, oh, that's my song. And I was like, wait a minute, that's my song. And I was tripping out. I was like so excited. I'm like, hey, you know, rolling down my window, my song's on the radio, you know, because I had to share it with somebody. What about a complete stranger, you know?
Right.
And I'm an introvert, shy person, you know. And I know my TikTok videos don't really show that, but in person, in a crowded room, I'm the quiet guy in the corner. So, but I was like, that was a moment that I'll never forget. I could not believe it. And that was, an I made it moment, you know. I finally made it on the radio because it was a dream. So that dream came true.
Now you're doing it for others.
Yeah, I know the feeling. I live vicariously through that. So especially when people can't catch a break, I love to be the person to say, I have a place, you know, for you. As long as you're not explicit and you're not vulgar, I don't like that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know how hard it is. And a lot of people that own radio stations like mine, they want to use it in order to make money. So they use it as a tool to make money, and they'll charge artists so much money to get so many spins.
Right.
So my motto, if you ever look at my logo, it says pay to play reversed.
Yeah.
Because instead of them having to pay me to get airplay, I reverse it. I pay them and I bring them on. Not only that, if they're registered with the a PRO agency like BMI or ASCAP or what have you, if they have their ISRC codes and their metadata is on point, their spin gets counted and they get their royalties for it.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because isn't that the other way around? Not what you're doing, but what other people are doing. Isn't that payola, essentially, which is not legal?
It's payola on the FM station for the FCC regulations and stuff. I don't know if it's FCC, but there is a payola thing that the corporate radio cannot do. And one of the reasons is because of advertising. So advertising is what keeps them alive on that. And their payola was back in the days, like when the radio was first coming out and people wanted to bump their songs, they'd pay the radio DJ so much money to get them on. So they regulated that to stop that from happening. I don't know the whole logistics behind it. I do know some of the stories, like used to offer gifts. People would offer radio DJs gifts to try to get on the radio, and that was, you couldn't do that. That turned into payola as well. One time, there's a DJ named Jim Ladd, very popular DJ out of Los Angeles, KLOS. He's a legend. So, He's responsible for discovering Jackson Browne. Really good friends with the Doors. We kind of know each other very well. So I was part of his tribe. There's a thing called the tribe, Jim Ladd and the tribe. I'm one of the tribe members of his tribe. And we saw hang out and go to parties. Well, I wrote a song about the tribe. It's out there. It's a low budget song, but I had this guitar, a blue guitar with all these signatures on it. And it was his birthday. And I thought, you know what, Jim Ladd's a legend. I'm going to give him this guitar. So I drove 100 miles because I lived in Victorville and he's down in Los Angeles. I gave the guitar. He was on the air. I gave the guitar to him for him. Security took, they checked it in for me. And then he called me that night. And he goes, I can't take this. You're going to have to pick this up. I can't take it. And at that time, I didn't realize what I was doing was violating payola, the payola laws. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Because he knew I was a musician, but he never played my music because my music was, it's not on the great level. It's on the, yeah, you're pretty good. It's on the, yeah, you're pretty good level. That's how my music is. So, his standards were set at a higher bar that he had respect for me, but he never played my music because it wasn't at the standards that was required. But, I didn't do that to get my song on the radio. You know, I just did that because I was a tribe member and that's what we did. We gifted him and we all gifted each other. But he called me up and he's like, you're going to have to come get it. I can't accept this. And I said, well, I just drove 100 miles to drop that guitar off. And I just walked in my door. He goes, you drove 100 miles to give me that? I go, yeah. And he goes, well, don't say nothing to nobody. I'll find a place for it.
Nice.
So it was between the tribe, us and the tribe. It was called the Famous Guitar because it had all kinds of autographs on it. Billy Bob Thornton, Billy Sherwood had Jim Ladd's autograph on it. I don't know who else. It was just loaded with autographs.
And these were all people you had met along the way?
Yeah, I'd go to functions and stuff. And kind of, you know, with the music thing, I just loved the music business. And I wanted to get into that portion of it. So I thought. And then as I started to meet more and more people, I grew less and less fond of it. I have high respect for a lot of people in the industry, but there's a lot of people I lost respect for after meeting them in person and finding out that the camera is the, how we perceive them on camera is not how they really are in person.
Mm. Yeah.
Somebody who really I have high respect for is Sheena Easton. I don't know if you know who Sheena Easton is.
Yeah, I know. I know Sheena Easton.
I was at a casino, and she did a show, and I was a cameraman for an interview. So, what's the name of that casino? I worked on a thing for the Travel Channel. So, it was a show on the Travel Channel for a casino, South Point Casino in Vegas.
Okay.
South Point had its own reality TV show. And me and a TV host were there to interview Sheena Easton. So we're doing that. And after the interview was done, before the interview, we were going backstage to her dressing room. And she had a whole bunch of fans. And what they do is they buy meet and greet tickets. She had all these fans that were ready to meet with her, and her attitude towards them off camera and out from the behind the scenes was as if she was getting ready to meet family members at a family reunion. Mm. That's how she's like, okay, guys, you know, we were wrapping up the interview. She goes, I gotta go. She gave me some water. She goes, you want some water? Gave me water. And she goes, I gotta go. I gotta go talk to my friends. I gotta go meet my, you know, just her. There was no, like, it didn't seem like it was a burden to go out to meet her fans. Like, she really wanted to go hang out and meet and greet with these people.
Sure.
And I thought that was really admirable.
It's the polar opposite to, I just went and saw, I don't know if you know this musician, her name's Poppy, and she's kind of like, she's a pop person who turned metal, and it's the music's great, but she does meet and greets, and this, what she does, I found out, is she puts herself in a glass cage, and you're not allowed to like talk to her, you can just come up and take a picture with her, and then you have to leave, and it's such the opposite of that, right? You know, because the show I'd been to before that wasn't a musician, but it was, I went and saw Whitney Cummings, who's a comedian. And she, after the show, she's like, anybody who wants to come get an autograph, come over, give me a hugs. And she was just everybody got a hug. Everybody was her friend. She talked to you as long as she wanted to talk with her. It was just, it was really cool. And that's, that makes all the difference, I think.
When you start to grow and your fame starts to get a little higher, you got to remember that people are going to start following you. They're going to have cameras. So if you're in public, no matter what you're going through, you always need to look like you're always happy. So it doesn't matter. You need to always look like you're just having the time of your life at all times when you're in public, because you don't know who has a camera and who's going to get that bad photo of you.
Yeah, that's true.
I was like, ah, that's hard, man, because I'm too bipolar for this. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I noticed you have a couple TikToks that are like, you know, be authentic. And it's really hard to live that authentic life and not be upset sometimes.
I'm just like, take it or leave it. That's the type. That's my attitude, is like that. I'm a take it or leave it person. Like the advice on certain things, like people say, don't take your TikToks down. You're going to ruin your TikTok, or, you know, certain things. But I'm like I said, I'm a rebel. You know, it's like, I don't follow rules. I just don't. And the more rules you put on me, the more I want to break them. And my TikTok account is growing pretty fast, so I'm not worried. And if it stops growing, I'm not worried, because it's not, if it starts doing that, then it's running my life, and I can't have that. I can't let something like that run my, I get excited when a video's, you know, got 1,000 views by the next day. I'm like, I show my wife, I said, I got another video taking off. And if the other ones have low views, it doesn't bother me. It's like, okay, so that video sucked. That's pretty much what I say. That video sucked. Nobody really cares for that one. So c'est la vie. On to the next. What can I come up with, you know?
Sure.
I don't want to be a character for the camera. I just want to be that, you know me for who I am, or don't know me at all, you know?
Sure.
And I got to do a lot of great things. I was in a Super Bowl commercial, you know, I got to hang out with rock and roll icons who changed, who made music history, you know. There's a recording artist on songs that I wrote who's a legend, a session player for celebrities, where the top of the line musicians go to this session player to have him play on their albums. He plays on my albums, you know, so I've had the privilege of a lot of great things, you know, but I work a day job. I work my butt off at a regular day job, and I live in an apartment. So it is what it is. I don't have to, and I don't manage my money well either. So I don't have that. I don't have that. One day I was interviewed. I had somebody on my podcast, and I was running my radio show, and I had this show called Pizza for Breakfast. A lot of people assume, they'll say, well, I'd like to be a guest in your studio. They don't realize that I'm in my living room on a PC with cheap equipment. They think it's a lot bigger than what it is. So if what they think I'm doing is a lot bigger than what it really is, if what they're perceiving, I'm in this big studio and I got all this equipment and all this other stuff, if their mind is taking them there, then I got to be doing something right. The thing is, I'm not going to hide behind making it seem that way either. The reality is, I'm in my living room, you know, in an apartment, upstairs, a single bedroom, and I'm living a very happy life this way, you know.
That's good. That's good.
If you understand what I mean and what I'm getting at.
I think so. So like, I've always been the kind of musician that I don't wait to get the right piece of gear or whatever. I make the best of what I have, right? And I think that's kind of what you're saying you're doing, is like, because I'll see your TikTok setup. I'll see the radio setup. You got the live on air thing, and you got all that stuff.
Yeah, the cheap Amazon lights. Yeah, I bought them off Amazon.
Right. But you make it work for you, is what I'm saying. That's all you really have to do in this, you know.
A lot of people will say, you don't want to do that. You know, you got to keep the secret sauce. You don't want to make people. But the thing is, then that's manipulation.
Right. I agree.
And I think manipulation is an art form, but it's an art form for people who are deceivers. So if you are a deceiver and you use certain crafts to manipulate people so you can get more out of them, that's just deception in my book. And I don't work that way. Of course, I want to make money, but I'm not gonna deceive somebody to make more money off of them.
Yeah, the exchange should be a mutual happy thing.
It should be mutual, and I do want to offer quality service, and I do know I have major talents that I can turn. I can use cheap software, but make it. I got hired. I did a Transformers movie. It's a, what's that movie? A movie trailer for Dark of the Moon. I did a Transformers movie trailer, Dark of the Moon. I did it on a software called Nero back in 2012 or something like that. It was played on the big screen. It was in the movie theaters, you know? And the thing is, I got it on there and I did it without an agent. I did it without really knowing anybody. I just submitted it and it went through and I got paid for it.
Wow.
I don't know if it was Taxi that I was with. I was with a company where you pay a monthly fee and they send you scripts. And this was part of the do-it-yourself era. This is brand new. There was people who worked in the industry who were selling like scripts because they would get a hold of scripts and then you offer bids for the job. I'm a nobody. And you hear people talking about using Adobe After Effects and all this stuff. I put it together and used things and spliced things my own way without any engineering education. I just kind of like, I winged it. I put it together. And I got the job. And the thing is, that's kind of how I am with the do-it-yourself stuff for people. It's like, you can find a way. You don't have to go through the number one way or three ways to do this. If you can find a way, you'll find it. It requires study and research, not asking somebody to get your foot in the door for you. You know, a lot of people do that. Like, hey, you know, they want you to, like, I got to meet a lot of people. There's people that want to go through me to get to somebody else. You know, that's called riding goat tail. That's where you're being used. You know, once you do the introduction, oh, hey, here's this person, you know? I know them. Yeah, I got their number. Yeah, okay. And you do the introduction, and then next thing you know, you never hear from them again. You know, they're buddy buddies with you until they made their way through to the person they're trying to reach.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely dealt with those kind of people as well. It's just part of the music thing, I think, but because people, you know, there's climb up each other's backs all the time.
I really don't care. It's not. When my songs were taking off and things were happening good for me, I started hanging out at these celebrity parties. I was getting starstruck. I was like starstruck. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I did act a little. My behavior was, I had to be. A good friend that got me in just said, Will, you need to be cool. You just need to be cool. You're a peer now. You're not a fan on the other end. You're a peer. So, you know, we all work together. We all just be cool. You don't have to go taking pictures with everybody, posting it online of who you met. We all work together now. So let fans do that. You're not a fan anymore. You're working in this side of the industry. So you don't have to go through all that stuff. And it was pretty cool because that's where I understood. And I was like, okay, you know, it's time to, you know, settle down. You get all starstruck, like, you know, it gets annoying because people always want pictures and autographs. And when you're working with somebody and you're asking for a picture and autograph, they're like, why?
Yeah.
Why? I'm recording with you. Why do you need my picture and autograph? We're on the same record. How much, what do you need proof?
Right.
On the Transformers thing, I just wanted to share a little trick that I did on the audio, because I gave it, I got the audio to do a surround sound sort of voice without having surround sound, and it worked. And what I did is I took the left and right track, and I expanded the tracks where you could see the sound and where it's going to start. And just by a couple milliseconds, I moved the left track forward at the start. I moved the right track just 2 milliseconds of the voiceover actor's voice. And I turned it into a stereo track. And I didn't know how to edit surround sound, but if you go on YouTube and you look up that movie trailer, Dark of the Moon, it says like Dream Media Enterprises, that was my company at the time, or it says edited by Will Stenner at the end. If you just type in like Transformers Dark of the Moon, Kurt Kelly voiceover, that's where you'll find it. That if you listen to that voice track, it sounds like surround sound through a mono speaker. And so I learned how to make a surround sound sounding voice through mono speakers by doing that.
And you just came up with that technique on your own, or is that something you learned?
I came up with it on my own.
Nice. I'm definitely gonna check. I'm a Transformer fan, so I'm gonna check that out.
If you watch it and you pick it apart, you could tell how amateurish it was, but it made it into the movie theater where it was like the coming soon.
Very cool.
That was one of my big hurrahs.
Is there anything that you wished we discussed today, but we didn't discuss yet?
I would like to share more details on how I learned to get my foot in the door on my own. There's a lot of do-it-yourself artists now, but I think there's people have turned the do-it-yourself stuff into businesses, and I believe it's so saturated that it ruined how it used to be, and there's new ways about it. But yeah, I would like to share ideas and thoughts on stuff like that.
Oh, well, why don't you tell us about it right now a little bit?
What a lot of artists are doing is they're letting music out. They want to get on the platform, but they're letting music out that is really underdeveloped, that really needs development. And in order to get on the bigger time, and they want to get connected with the, bigger part of the industry. I'm not talking about the artists that say, I do this for therapy, it's therapeutic for me. I'm doing this for the artists who really have the dream. What they're doing is they're releasing their music without really going through it with a fine comb. And what they're doing is they are doing all the production themselves. There's no other influence. It's just their own influence. And without the engineering and stuff like that. So you can, to a person who works in the industry at very professional, high levels, they can hear that. They can hear that and they can tell. So I would suggest for people in the do-it-yourself to really put together the finance and budget and make it an investment. Think about the investment first and get into a studio and hire engineers and producers who are trained in this, because they can really help you. They can really help people with vocal ranges. They can help people with walk-ups and downs in the music, with their bridges and choruses. A lot of people are stuck on, well, this is my song, it's my baby. But having somebody who's got that professional, who's profoundly professional in this business, who does this for a living, the engineers, there's a reason why they're an engineer. For that do-it-yourself person, those are the people they need to reach out to, is those engineers, and get into those studios and do one song at a time and let that engineer help them influence the song, because that will help them make it. A lot of people, their ego gets in the way and they do sound good, but that's where it stops. They don't sound great. And if they want to sound great, they'll go into a professional studio with the engineers, save the money, make the investment. And the way they do that is by calling up the studio around their area, find the person who's worked on projects, who does have a name for themselves, because if they have the money to pay for the studio time, the engineer will work with them. So they're not gonna gatekeep them. The only thing that gatekeeps people is lack of finance. So an engineer can really take somebody who's average and mediocre. They can really bring them up because that's what they do for a living. So that's some advice I could give for people. Not the ones that are like, well, I just do this for therapy, blah blah blah. Usually those are people who are broke. They just can't afford it. That's what broke people say. So people who can invest and know how to save their money and really want this and really, really want to make that song that has that impact, invest in quality studio time with engineers because they can develop them into the right areas. And that is going out to the people who understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I agree totally. And that's not just because I'm an engineer, an audio engineer. I totally agree.
It's true because I think that's one of the biggest mistakes they make. They want to make it in the business, but they want to make it with recording from Pro Tools in their house or using Reaper or using Fruity Loops. Or you know, they want to be there. There are people who do it. I mean, Dury is phenomenal. But I think Dury does spend the money. They do go into a studio, and I don't think it's just Austin doing his own recordings. You know, I think there's more involved in it. So I think I'm. It's only an assumption.
There's always exceptions to the rule, too. I mean, there's people who, you know, because they have audio engineer experience, they can record their own band because they're so used to doing that thing for other people. But even then, it's nice to have other ears on the project.
It is good to have the other trained ears, because if you're doing everything on your own and it's your own idea and you're the drummer, you're the bass player, you're the guitar player, you're the vocalist, you're the whole thing on the track, it's lacking ingredients. It's lacking other influence, and other influence brings in great ingredients.
Right. I agree.
Like my songs, I'm the main ingredient in the songs, but it's influenced by a guy who goes on tour with Bruce Springsteen. He's been on Tom Petty albums. You know, there's a guy that goes on tour with John Fogerty that has his influence in it. You know, so my songs are okay. They're good, but they're not great. But they would be a lower budget if those people weren't involved.
Personally, I don't think I've ever done a song by myself that wasn't taken to another level as a collaboration. Like, that's just what collaboration does, you know, regardless of what kind of collaboration.
Yeah, it helps, because I learned so much more working with engineers. I learned so much more about what I could do with the guitar sounds, that even though you may not be able to hear it on the track, you could still, if you eliminate the guitar, you could still hear the difference that it makes in the richness of the sound.
Yeah.
And the different techniques that were used that I've seen in the studio, where you wouldn't think that it's part of the sound, because it would barely even be in the mix at such a low frequency, but you remove the frequency, you could still hear the difference.
Right.
So the engineer showed me, he said, look, you really can't hear it. He goes, do you hear it? I go, I don't hear it. He goes, I'm going to take it out now. He goes, do you hear a difference in the song now? I said, I do. I hear, it sounds a little flatter. He goes, I'm going to add it in. I said, yeah, I do hear it. But it's interesting how that technique that he showed me, even though you don't know that the instrument is in there, the difference it makes in the sound. It was amazing on how that worked, just to add a frequency.
One of the things I learned in going through my audio engineering stuff was we would do this stuff where someone would pull up a frequency, like here's 4,000 hertz, and you had to name it off. Well, you know, they'd play it, and you'd be like 4,000 hertz, or you'd get your closest guess to it. And that's really helpful because it lets you hear the entire frequency of a song, and you can find little spots that are trouble spots that way. You know, like, oh, there's a weird ring here at, you know, 1,200 hertz. Let's pull that down, and then all of a sudden the song's way more listenable. You know, that kind of thing. So that there's training that they probably have that you wouldn't even think of, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Do you mind telling people where they can find you online?
DiscoverUradio.com. So it looks like Discovery Radio. A lot of people will say Discovery Radio, but it's Discover, the word Discover, the word you, the word radio.com. DiscoverUradio.com. So when I bought the .com address and I looked at it, I said, this might be a problem, but it really hasn't been. It works out. So yeah, discoveryradio.com. And my website, it's always under development. So you'll find pages, like I have a page on it now. It says there's a podcast I'm working on for our author named Tim Northberg. So there's a page and a tab on my website right now that I didn't hide because I forget to do this, but it's completely blank. So anybody clicks on Tim Northberg, there's nothing there, but there will be a podcast up for that guy. I just got to hide the page. The thing is, my website, I'm always doing stuff to it. So it's always under development, and it never, sometimes you'll run into something and it will never look finished ever. And that's just a representation of the functioning of my mind.
Always under construction.
I am an idea person, idea maker.
Cool.
I love to come up with ideas, and also believe that, like somebody would say, well, that's not going to work. And I'm like, oh, how do you know? We haven't tried it yet. So I have to try it before calling it a you know, it's not a failed idea. It's just what I learned not what to do. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, even if it doesn't work, it has value. You're going to figure out something from it.
It's like, okay, that didn't work. And how I can either work, you know, just trash it or develop from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have tons of ideas that just totally flopped, but I'm still proud of them.
Of course, it's part of you. Thanks a lot for being here, Will. And I'll see you on the TikToks, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll be out there. I haven't made any in a while. I'm going to make some.
Yeah.
I love to do the random act of kindness, which is my For You page. I love when an artist I've never heard of and we're not friends, but they show up on my For You page. I absolutely love to go in, make a video of me buying their song, tagging them in the video, and putting them on the radio saying, I like to buy music. I like to do this. I love the element of surprise for the artist. Some of them respond pretty good, and some of them really don't care, you know, but I love to do that random act of kindness. Most of them respond very well.
Yeah.
I pinned the video, and it was the very first one that I did, and it was with the Sea Home Band, and that video is what has, that TikTok video is what put me on the TikTok map, where all of a sudden I'm at like 200 followers, and I'm doing follow trains, you know, just trying to build my account, you know, learning TikTok, you know, saying follow train, follow us, we'll follow you back. So I started doing that at first, trying to build my account. It was about 200 something followers. And I made that video, and that video the next day was like at thousands of views, and I already had like thousand, my follower count went to over 1,000 by a day. So that was when I'm like, that this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And that's where my TikTok has grown since. And I think I started it in November, and it was slow for months. And then I think either January or February is where it just started snowballing. So every day I'm picking up at least 100 new followers.
Don't you have like a live show you do like every night, or is it every weeknight or something?
Oh yeah, I do. I go live. I'll be live tonight.
Oh, okay.
I go live Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 p.m. And I go live specifically to buy music and add people into the rotation. So it's a specific set out time. I'm live. I'm buying their music. I want the artists to see I'm buying their music. I want them to see I'm putting them on the radio. So I do that so I can see their reaction. Because I love to see, I made somebody's day. Like my motto says, to make somebody's day. I really stand behind the motto that's on my website. So if you go to my website on the bottom, I even have a radio ad that has the motto. On the bottom of my website is the full motto. And I stand behind that 100%. So I really want to make somebody's day. Not like the type of TikTok video where you see the guys and they're giving homeless people money and, you know, where they're using it to their benefit, like just catching homeless people off guard. Like, I wanted to give you this $500, you know, and then it's like, it's really nice. But then again, it's like, it still seems like a selfish motive.
I agree. Yeah.
I don't want to be like that, but I'd love to do this for people, but I don't want it to fall into that category. So sometimes I'm like, should I just shut this off? Is that what I'm doing? Because that's not what I mean to do, you know? So that's the struggle I have with that sometimes, you know?
Well, you come off more authentic to me than what those people do. Do you know what I'm saying?
I like to do the random act of kindness, but I don't want it to be like, oh, Will's a nice guy type of deal. He's a good person, nice guy. I am, but I don't want that perception to be, because I do get pissed off and I do get mad, you know, and I can say things that I regret, you know. So I am human, you know. I'm not always a nice guy. So I'm human. So
aren't we all?
Yep.
All right, Will. Well, I'll let you get to it, and I know you got your show here coming up. And thanks for being here.
Thanks for the platform. I appreciate it. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Happy to do it.
You gave me enough time to be a narcissist.
It's okay to do that once in a while.